Thank you very much for the introduction. And as Genevieve pointed out, I'm talking about the targeted participants in an urban Ciclovia initiative, and specifically about Sunday streets in San Francisco. And my caveat starting off my talk is that this is a work in progress. And I might say that a few dozen times throughout my talk, but I'll take questions anyway at the end. I have no relationships to disclose. And a little bit about Sunday Streets in general. For those of you that aren't familiar with Open Streets initiatives, Sunday Streets is one of these. There are more than 80 across the country at this point, and of course they're international, and if you've heard about their origins in Bogota, you should know that that's contested in San Francisco because we think we were one of the early ones, but that's another paper for another time. In general, the Open Streets initiatives use city streets, existing infrastructure, to create physical activity opportunities and open space, so we call them temporary parks. The streets at that point are closed to vehicle traffic, and the routes are roughly, in our case, from about 3 miles, some are a little bit shorter, to over 6 miles, so they vary depending on the neighborhood. We started in 2008 with two events on two routes, and we expanded to 10 events on 7 routes this year. And I just wanted to point out that among our original goals, this was, if you know anything about California, you know our lieutenant governor is Gavin Newsom, and he's the former mayor of San Francisco, and this was his baby in 2008. He came back from a mayor's conference and had heard about the event in Bogota, and he said, we're going to do this, and it happened in 2 months. If you know anything about community organizing, that was super fast. But his plan was less about the health benefits and more about community building. He said, let's find a way to have neighborhoods communicate with each other who normally wouldn't or who historically have not, and create that kind of community connection, building neighborhood investment in the project itself. One of the important features of the open streets movement, and particularly in our case where I'm going to focus, is the piece around route development. Where does the route go? And in our case, there really was an effort to move the events, and for those of you who know anything about the open streets movement, they like to call them initiatives. I may just use the word events because it's a little bit quicker and easier to pronounce up here. But the idea is to have the events move through quote-unquote underserved neighborhoods, and I say quote-unquote because one of the pieces of this project is around the concept of underserved. Now, the organizers of Sunday Streets did use existing documents, health data, city planning maps, rec and park assessments, and those kinds of things to identify four main criteria for developing the routes. You see them up here. So low serve for open space, and some of the neighborhoods that Sunday Streets go through have literally less than a couple dozen acres of open space. They have rates of chronic disease way above city averages, they're low income, and predominantly ethnic minority populations. And this actually kind of raised the question for us about what counts as underserved. And one of the pieces that I'll try to argue for, at least make a claim for in this project, is expanding the definition of underserved to include open space and recreational facilities. So one of the things that kind of inspired this project was a CDC evaluability study that happened in 2010. One of the questions came out of there, some folks who were contracted by the CDC came to study Sunday Streets, and one of the questions they raised has to do with the sustainability of the event as a health activity. Does it bring about sustainable increases in physical activity to prevent or decrease obesity? And we realized we wanted to know more about reach. Does this event actually reach its targeted participants? We had some health data already on our participants. We know they spend several hours there. The events themselves are 5 hours on typically at least one Sunday a month, and they're engaging in physical activity for at least an hour. We saw in our population, our surveyed population, a 25% change in overall physical activity behavior on the positive side. We know that that's relatively unheard of in typical interventions. And one of the pieces that I used to respond to the CDC inquiry was to sort of look at zip code data for the participants, and we found out that they were traveling more than 7 miles round trip to get to the Sunday Streets events. If you've been to San Francisco, you know it's a really small place. It's only 7 square miles. And so right away, this kind of announced to us that folks were coming from all over the city to attend these events, and that we had a better chance and a better question around asking around reach. And finally, we did also ask folks about their reasons for attending and returning, and we found that some of those neighborhood issues around community building were important reasons for people to attend. They talked a lot about the safety. If you come to a Sunday Streets and you do see those thousands of people, most of them are walking down the middle of the street because they can. It's just kind of fun. And we have a lot of anecdotal evidence also about sort of the their reaction to being in neighborhoods that they may never have gone to. Again, in that small city, having lived there their whole lives, sometimes people don't enter into other neighborhoods. And so, and among these other health outcomes that we had, we looked at first-time attendees versus those who have been to multiple events, and that gave us some additional information about what was happening with them. So, again, this started to raise the question for us about using open space as an important criterion, a variable for looking at reaching its targeted population. We wanted to connect that open space with being underserved. So embedded in this deeply, by the time we sent in the abstract to what we're doing now, we've really got two different directions we're going on. They're related, but one is to really explore this whole idea of underserved, what that means, what it means with respect to our population that's attending Sunday Streets, and how can we use this as a way to understand reach into its targeted population. So I'll ask you to try to keep those two pieces in your head at the same time. So briefly around the first part, and this really is a part that's a work in progress, initial preliminary digging into the literature shows that this is really a problematic concept in the literature, meaning we don't have a shared agreement about what it means. Folks use all sorts of different variables to look at underserved, and that may be appropriate. That's sort of one of the things we're dealing with right now. You probably have seen this in your own searching of the literature. There's a focus on low income. That means underserved sometimes. Ethnic minority status sometimes means underserved. And so we sort of ended up with an underserved for what kind of question. And one of the pieces is, what about access to open space and physical activity? And I'm using those terms very broadly to include, of course, parks and playgrounds and all sorts of recreational facilities. And in San Francisco, and I think this may be true of other urban areas, but I only know my city really well, there's a complex relationship between alone these two variables, income and access to open space. We have, and so that's an environmental justice issue. We have very low-income communities that have low access to open space, and we have low-income communities that have high access to open space. And so that sort of complicates our discussion. We began to look into some of the reasons why that open space isn't used, and I'm sure you can already speculate on why some of those might be. You know, the typical safety concerns, violent crime that happens in open space. In one of our largest open spaces in a low-income neighborhood in San Francisco was previously a shipyard, and that is just, I don't know what the best term for that is, but a well of environmental toxin is the best way to put it, I guess. That's the nice spin on that. It's really not a very nice space, and now they're building housing on it. Okay, that's another paper for another time. But anyway, so we want to really problematize the reasons why that open space isn't used, even when it is available. Okay, so we had two phases and two different methods that were used to look at both of these pieces, and I apologize, it should actually say phase one up there. So we used our existing data that we had collected. We started out with 626 participants, 24-item survey, including all the standard demographic pieces, physical activity behavior questions, both overall behavior and at Sunday Streets, and we asked for zip code. And that was zip code of residence, because we had a couple of questions in there about where did you start you're mourning from, so we wanted to find out how far people are traveling to the event, but also where they lived. And we ended up eliminating some cases. You can see we ended up with 429. We wanted to get rid of, and I mean that in the best way, the folks who don't live in San Francisco because they're not really part of our targeted population. Okay. So our focus really was on San Francisco residents in this project. Okay, so for phase one, we had an expert did the analysis, expert grouping. We used the existing data to develop three groups. I'll explain those in 1 second. And basically, we took that zip code data, and so I'm the expert, in case you were wondering. And we used zip code data cross-referenced with a planning department map, and the planning map focused on density, so we could see density of neighborhoods and the relationship between access to open space. We had a park assessment report from 2006, and they identified, it was a consulting group that identified neighborhoods that were had low access to open space. And it's a very complicated methodology here because we have this, like many urban areas, this relationship between zip codes, neighborhoods, supervisorial districts, and we had to sort of overlay all of those to get at exactly what was happening with the Sunday Streets routes, which might cross, they go through neighborhoods, but they might actually cross districts and so forth. So that was a bit complicated. We found that Sunday Streets routes go through 27 of the 54 zip codes, so we were able to then look at our participant data and see pretty much what happened. And I should have this on the slide, I apologize, but in your head, if you can just store this for a few minutes, the three groups, the first group were targeted populations who were on the route. So in other words, folks who lived on the route, and if you go back to those earlier criteria for route development, then we know that we've already developed the routes to attract and intersect with the targeted population. So that's the obvious group, they live on the route. The second group were targeted populations living off the route. So the people who traveled to the event, what kind of neighborhoods did they come from? So that second group were also targeted in terms of our being underserved. And the third group were non-targeted. So for all those, they didn't meet those four criteria in the beginning, either they weren't low income or so forth. Okay, so those were that's what happened with the phase one expert grouping. In phase two, we used a cluster analysis, and I have colleagues who did the statistical analysis. I'm going to share with you to the best of my ability what that means. So a cluster analysis is used to evaluate the groups. So we used it to compare the groups in phase one according to degree of similarity and closeness of association. So in other words, it doesn't tell us exact match, but it tells us a degree of similarity and closeness of association. It was based on 7 variables that we selected using things that are sort of our known barriers to physical activity from the literature and the domains that came out through our health data, and I'll show you these now. So you can see the typical variables we selected, again, the 7 out of more than 90 of those, income and education. So we included bike lanes and recreation area to integrate, to incorporate some of those open space variables that we're looking for in terms of our expanded definition of underserved. The crime and safety piece, sort of another typical barrier. And down at the bottom, outcomes from some of the health data, right? So what happens when you don't have access to physical activity. So pretty much standard categories. With the addition of the open space piece. Okay, so here's what it looks like, the expert groupings by percentage. So if you recall that group one on the left-hand side, 43% targeted populations living on the route, as you might expect. Group number two, targeted groups living off the route. And finally, in group three, we had 32%, so about a third, coming from non-targeted populations. And I think what's really an important highlight of this slide, and even of the whole initiative, Sunday Streets, is that we're hitting more than two-thirds of the participants are coming from the targeted groups. And that's been a huge question around Open Streets initiatives. Are they just sort of attracting people who are already physically active, who are well-educated, and already likely to do those things? So at least from our participant population, we're showing a very nice outcome there. Now things get a little more complicated, and basically this slide just shows this is really should be phase two, cluster analysis by percentage. And the important point here is that basically it confirms that there's three groups in our data. Don't worry so much about the percentages at the moment. Those numbers are not important vis-a-vis the comparison that I'll share with you in a minute. This is just to confirm, the cluster analysis confirmed that there are three groups. And this is really the important piece for us. So that's groups from the expert grouping on the left-hand side, and on the right-hand side, this is comparing the expert groupings with the cluster analysis, and I'm going to try to interpret this for you. So on that right-hand side, you see 72%. That is from the expert group 1 and expert group 2. So basically those first two groups on the left-hand side, which are our targeted populations, we show a comparison with 72% fell into that cluster analysis group one. So that's a great finding in terms of confirming our analysis. Over there in the far right-hand side, you see 16%. That's cluster analysis group three. Those are very interesting, and we're still sort of kind of spinning around on how to interpret those. That 16% were from group one. That was our targeted population living on the route that fell off of the analysis. And one of the reasons is they, to be specific, they come from a downtown area, but it's a high income downtown area. So again, that kind of complication around income and access to open space that we're still kind of working on. I know around equity issues, high income people are not so important necessarily. We're really focusing on people who don't have other means of access, but it did complicate that analysis a little bit. And that's probably typical of a lot of urban areas where there's a mix of incomes sort of right next to each other that might get integrated into a zip code area. Expert group one and expert group two were divided, so they were ended up being divided into our two groups. That's the 72% and the 16%. And finally, that 96% in the middle is our expert group three, the non-targeted population. And basically what that shows is that's not a number. It shows a confirming of similarity with our expert group three. Okay? All right. So now, what am I doing here? Perfect. So just to like to make some overall comments and points about this, and as I said, it's a work in progress, so we're still looking at this relationship between reach and what underserved means. We did discover multiple definitions, and that's a piece we're definitely going to explore further. I think that would be of broader usefulness to folks doing research in this area. We continue to think positively about incorporating open space and recreation into how we understand underserved, considering we're coming from a focus on physical activity research, and we really have to consider what does access mean. We also found that, and this might be of use for folks who are thinking about organizing or are in the process of organizing open streets or other large-scale interventions, that there's a lot of available data that can be used to kind of overlay and identify targeted populations, perhaps around route development and design and even the hours of the day and the days of the week that the events are run. We had lots of issues around that. For example, in San Francisco, this is true probably everywhere, among African American populations, there's an importance around church attendance on Sunday. And the very first year we had one of our events go through a historically African American neighborhood on a Sunday morning, not good. So we really had to take a much deeper look at how to use the data and available information to develop routes. We found that Sunday Streets, so far in our analysis, does reach its targeted population. And I already mentioned the point about using data for route selection criteria. So just to kind of recap a little bit, It's not clear yet whether one overarching definition of underserved will be the most useful or appropriate, or whether it really does benefit us to have flexible definitions that can be operationalized in different contexts, because this term underserved has the potential to inform broader policies, health in all policies, HIA, if you're familiar with those, transportation for multiple outcomes. So I think we can really tease a lot more out of this. And finally, this last point about, norm changes in neighborhoods, it sort of raised the question to us, if a neighborhood is defined as underserved, and if it self-identifies as underserved, what can be the impact of these kinds of events and initiatives or what's the broader potential in helping them shift that identity? What does it mean to actually offer more around the open space piece in terms of rethinking the definition or the definition of the neighborhood as an underserved neighborhood? So with that, I thank you very much. That's my colleague who did the statistical analysis, so the questions are going to have to go to her. That was a way to bail out, huh?
Do we have time for a question or two?
You can't ask any questions. Hello there, fellow panel mate.
One of my questions was about the businesses. Did you need to work with businesses, and did you have any pushback from them, or were they happy about participating? And then did you measure whether people stopped with those businesses?
Right. Yeah. Well, interesting that you asked that question. So we just completed an economic impact assessment of merchants along the routes. Very quickly in the beginning, in 2008, if you've been to San Francisco, you've probably been to Fisherman's Wharf, and one of the earlier events went along the Embarcadero, past the ferry building, down into Fisherman's Wharf, and the merchants there were horrified by the idea that we would close the street and close the garages. And pretty quickly they realized that having 20 to 25,000 people walking by their front doors may actually be a good thing. And so now there's a big clamor around neighborhoods to actually have Sunday streets go through there. So just anecdotally, there's been a huge shift and a much more positive thinking about Sunday streets from the merchant standpoint. I'm not here to report the economic outcomes, but I can tell you that we showed a huge benefit from many types of businesses. It depends on the type of business. It's a very difficult thing to measure also because of the issues around indirect impact. So, for example, you've done this yourself, right? You've been to some event, you've noticed a business, and you said, that's interesting, I'll have to come back here later. So you may not be spending money on that day, but there may be an indirect impact. But nonetheless, we found overall positive economic activity for merchants along the route, and among other things, an increase in hiring employees also. So lots of other economic outcomes from Sunday streets. Yeah.
All right. So if you can hold your questions, we'll have a little bit of time at the end where we can have all the panelists come back up. But thank you again.